Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
All right, welcome back to the Jimmy Talks podcast. As always, like, subscribe, comment, and actually share to your mates and tag me in it or tag someone in it, because it helps with our reach and it helps with getting better guests on. And if you're coming to the Con Expo 2026, I have a discount code to help you out with your ticket prices. It's Starbuck30. This code will give you 30% off. It's valid until December 5th, so use it to help out with the ticket prices, and I hope to see you there. All right, welcome back to another episode. Today we are here with Ryan Ruth, our first international guest who has flown across the ocean from New Zealand to join us. He owns a company called Next Level Civil, and we're going to talk all things business today and also where you came from and what you did. Say g'day.
G'day. Yeah. pleased
wait,
to be
you
here.
Don't say g'day, do you?
Oh, we say kia ora in New Zealand. Kia ora. Morena. There's a few others there.
It sounds made up, if I'm honest. Sounds made up. But so we start off the episode the same way every single time, which is, who are you? What's your business? And what makes you come on the podcast? And then we get into a little bit more of your story. So take away who you are, where you came from, and what you do.
So I'm from Auckland, New Zealand, particularly from South Auckland, which holds some rep around the world, if you look at the headlines sometimes. I grew up in a little sort of harbourside community, rural, sort of on the back of the World Wars, and when the Anzacs, the ones that did return, come back, they needed a job. So a lot of New Zealand got sort of broken up into areas, and peninsulas got split up into dairy farms. And so I grew up in a rural community, very small community and tight-knit community. And eventually went to high school in no nice way to say it, the ghetto. So it was a big change. So sort of come from a background of driving tractors and doing hay and, you know, doing hard yards to, you know, going to school in town and getting some sort of education. And, I come from a long line of fishermen, funnily enough. I'm not a generational earth mover at all. Don't actually really have anyone in our family that's in the business. So
started out on your own. And I think that we actually do a little bit of a thing here where we ask for emails to tell a little bit of the story so that I know a little bit where we're driving to and how to drive it. So then you went out and you became, what was it, a labourer for a geotechnical company was your first bit into the dirt. Is that right?
So I wasn't really sure what I was sort of going to do towards the end of college. And I just knew that growing up, you know, working with my dad out on the water and sort of working with my hands, I knew that I wasn't going to uni in a hurry. So, good family friend of ours, Plank Sherwin, R.I.P., who was a very renowned driller in New Zealand, slotted in under him and his brother's company, Prodrill, right after the Christchurch earthquakes, which was sort of, they were going gangbusters. And basically we had a bit of an agreement where we would, unbeknown to my dean and my gateway lady, me and Plank had a deal where when he needed a spare hand, he'd ring my gateway lady up and tell her that there was this big job going on and that we needed Ryan there and that would be awesome work experience for him and blah, 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 when really he just fucking needed a drilling off-sider. And
He'd
pluck me out of school for a week, send me up into the hills. I'd throw drill rods around for fucking 12, 14 hours a day.
And you look like a bloke who can throw a drill rod.
I could. Not every day, though. Could do maybe like probably 3 or 4 days a week's tops for me. I used to.
For those who don't know, how much the drill rods weigh?
pretty fucking heavy. Pretty fucking heavy. And when you're short and you got to throw them on the string in the ground and sort of thing them up and get them below the head on the mast. Yeah, there was a few times we were running for fucking dear life when there was a 6 metre drill rod coming back down.
Occupational health and safety is strong now. Maybe not so much back then.
Nah.
It seems to increase every year that we go along, so that no one's trying to dodge a 6 metre flight coming down to take a bit off of their scalp. So then you're in geotech, and then where do you go to from there?
So, yeah, I was sort of doing work experience, and really I was pretty much full-time drilling and sort of part-time schooling, luckily receiving a little bit of something on the side under the table for it. Was earning more money then at 15 than I probably am today.
Yeah, great.
Funnily enough.
Sorry.
But, yeah, sort of done that for a while, and then I was talking to a cousin of mine at a family gathering, and I mentioned, he sort of asked me, he was the first person that asked me in my life, what are you going to fucking do with yourself? And that's when I said, oh, hey, I'm sort of thinking of maybe going to Oz and, you know, working up in the mines and jumping on machines or whatever goes, you know. I just knew that I didn't want to be fucking broke, so that was where the money was, and that's where the narrative is out of New Zealand. If you want to make money, you come to Oz and you go to the mines and you fucking slave away up there for years on end. So never quite got there. He said to me, his best mate is a very respected earth mover. His family is very respected in Auckland. And that was on a Friday night, and the following Monday week I was hanging off the side of a D7 and scoop, working for a contractor, Ross Reed Contractors, which is one of the probably handful of big subdivisional bulk sort of companies in Auckland. Been around since 1953, which is quite rare in New Zealand, which we can have a conversation about, but businesses don't tend to run 2 to 3 generations. They tend to sort of go one.
I think that's probably not even just a New Zealand thing. I think it's across the world there. What's that saying that the first generation builds it, the second generation enjoys it, the third generation destroys it, because they don't see the hard work that the old boy did, or you know, old girl too. So, and I think that that's part of the challenge that, you know, all businesses run through, how you can create a true legacy business, which is that people are engaged in it, the children are engaged in it, or whatever it might be, that can actually last generations. But it takes a certain sort of family as well to do that, which is why it starts to be, it's hard enough to just be in business that lasts 20 years anyway.
Well, if it lasts a fucking week
Sometimes you're lucky if you last out the week, and then you've got to get to the month, and then year one. We've got 19 left. After all of that, you've got to look at it and you go, do I have kids?
Yep.
Are the kids interested?
Yep.
And then even if they are interested, is my kid as thick as two short planks glued together with stupid glue?
Yeah.
Possibly they are, and in which case they're not going to do very well at running a company.
No.
So it takes a lot of things to get it through, and, you know, Australia and New Zealand being, a bit, you know, without as much history as like a Europe and an America and stuff, a bit shorter in age, it makes it a bit challenging to have that, you know, different, long lines. So, all right, so then you're working for a D7 and in a scoop.
D7 and scoop, which is a dying, even over the almost 15 years I've been in the game, dying type of machine.
That to me is just it's just the times moving on, tracks are really expensive, tires are less expensive, maintenance, downtime, speed,
training,
all of it,
the whole lot,
all of it, a scraper makes sense, or diggers and moxies make sense. D7 toe and a, what are they, a 15-yard bowl or something,
15.
You know, 12 cubic metre bowl, doesn't quite make sense. So, I don't know if I've ever seen them working in Oz. I see them on the internet a lot.
They're quite, so in New Zealand we have like quite a varying geography. geography. Particularly in Auckland, we have, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of soil types, substrates.
Oh, come on
from
now. Listen to him. This is where New Zealand obviously has to be more difficult to dig than Australia. Oh, there's hundreds of soil types.
I remember bidding a job on a side note. I remember bidding a job about 2 years ago, and there was a note in the tender that said they wanted a solid cube measurement, cut out, breakout and cut out rate, and in Auckland nobody, you'd be dumb to put a rate on rock.
Why?
Because sometimes over there it'll take you 10 minutes to bang out a truckload, other times it'll take you 3 days.
Of course. Price it at a day and a half. Let's giddy up and go. And that one we bring a little digger, and this one we bring a big dog, and then that one, strap the biggest breaker we can onto it, almost one that'll break the boom in half, and then start cracking it. I don't think I'd win a job if in the biggest sort of game. I don't think I'd win a job if I didn't take on the rock risk.
And
I think the part of what the challenge around a lot of it is that risk is actually sometimes has to be a negative. So when people in business are sitting down and saying, oh, I can remember having this conversation with you. We've been talking years. You know, a true risk is one that can bite you in the ass. Mm-hmm. It has to, you know, because otherwise it's not a true risk at all. So, like, I can remember saying, oh, you know, like, you go, oh, we'd never lump some rock, like, you know, a rock variation. I'll go, fuck.
You gave me the rate. I'm pretty sure you like gave me the rate. Was you didn't even say g'day. You were just like da 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 cube, and I'm like, ballsy.
Yeah, 100%. And it's just one of those things, you know. Like I take the risk on rock. I take the risk on the duration of the rock too. Yep. So how long that'll take to break out? Now, if you say 3 days for that truckload over there, you're not going to win it.
No.
If you say 10 minutes for the one over there, which you said, you know, you've got two different sides. One takes 10 minutes for a truckload. One takes 3 days. If you price him for 10 minutes, you're going to fucking lose a shitload of money too.
Yeah.
So it's somewhere in the middle, and then it's up to the company and how good it is to grasp that risk, make it pay, you know, make everyone happy, and off we run. Now, in saying that, I've lost big.
Yeah.
But I've also won big. It's just trying to keep the wind sometimes is a little bit more difficult.
Well, once you're at your scale and at the size of the jobs you're probably looking at, there's probably only a handful of guys that are willing to take the risk anyway.
Oh, right? There's more, you know.
I suppose over here I noticed when you were over in NZ and we caught up, you know, over dinner, one thing I noticed straight away was you guys are way more ballsier.
Is it ballsier or is our market just different?
Market's different.
The market's different. I can guarantee you that if someone started taking on the rock risk, like let's say you think of the biggest company you can think of, and if they said, right, we're only lump summing rock now, that's it, then every single person in New Zealand would have to lump sum rock because otherwise every job that they competed on, they'd win.
Yep.
And so then it's just a different market. If the 2, 3, 10 biggest people in Auckland around it all say, no, our soil conditions are too varying, our rock hardness, you know, goes from polystyrene to pretty much diamonds that we have to hammer out, and everyone knows you can't do that. And if they all get together and say, right, it's rate work only, well, then you get to play in that. In Melbourne, the biggest guys say rock works, lump sum work. So if you want to play in their space, you're playing that game too.
Jump in line.
Yeah, exactly. So then you've gone contracting, you're driving a scoop, and then we should get into some next level civil. So where'd you go to from after contract work?
So with this company I was with, sort of was with them for just over a year, learnt the art of bulk earth moving, you know, twin power scrapers, 637s, 631s, 623s, 615s, 613s. They have a very large Caterpillar fleet, mostly Caterpillar, so broke my teeth in that and learnt the art of shifting dirt, you know, cycle times, you know, stockpile building, cut to fills, drying efficiencies. The real nitty gritty stuff, and like what you said before about the generational businesses, I've always held it very close to me that our money's made where the bucket hits the ground.
Yep.
And so you can have the biggest, baddest business from the outside in, but if you're not making money where your cutting edge hits the fucking ground, mm-hmm. it's good for fuck all.
Yeah, 100%.
So those skills I picked up at Ross Reed still carry me through to today around, you know, just the simplest things of how to position machines when loading. And
you know, I said to a guy the other day, he's like, oh, what's a really important part? And I'm like, oh, we're allowed to start work at 7. Mm. I like trucks being loaded at 7:01. Mm. And he's like, oh, no, we don't start loading trucks till 7:30 or 8 o'clock. And I go, yeah, but the tip site closes. And it closes the gates at 4 every day.
Yeah.
You've only got a maximum amount of time to make money. Yep. Like, and that starts at 7 with the permits and ends at 4 with the tip closing. The fact that you're taking an hour and a half screwing around when the actual money is made in moving the dirt,
yeah,
whether it's in a scraper, whether it's in the back of a truck, whether it's in the bucket of a digger, you make money moving that dirt and earth moving, move it. It was a foreign concept, like, nah, we make money organising the job. And, you know, when you go, no, you don't, though. You don't, though. The progress claims only come from the amount of earth you've moved. Yeah. Or if you move into it in the other way. You want to be starting to put pipe in the ground. Mm. You want to be starting to lay asphalt, you know. Like, you don't want to be hanging about. Now, if everything can be done before 7, your pre-starts, your take fives, your JSAs, your permits, your bullshit, your whatever, which I don't say bullshit trying to downgrade it, but at the end of the day, sometimes it's bullshit.
You know? For 15 minutes, and I always say that there's multiple things I can say there. The first thing I always say to my team, one load out in the morning, one extra load out in the morning is a load that doesn't have to come out at the end of the day. Furthermore to what you've said in the past, every job has a finite amount of soil to take out or export out, right? So the more numbers you can get in a working period,
the longer the job runs, the more risks there are for things that are outside factors that we can't control.
100%.
Traffic, which Auckland has the shittest traffic known to man. I've been to Shanghai and the traffic was better than it was in Auckland, and that's a city of 30 million people.
Yeah.
You know? And so traffic comes into play, the weather comes into play.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of factors that start to come into play the longer that the job runs that need to be looked at, you know? And so then if you can move the dirt, if you can put the pipe in the ground, if you can try and push those efficiencies as much as possible, you probably should.
Yeah. I've always boiled it down to two things, this type of business. Put the machines aside, the trucks aside, all the bullshit aside. We're in the business of risk and we're in the business of time.
Yeah.
That's really all we do, is we assess the risk and we base the time on the risk.
3 days or 10 minutes. For the rock.
That's it. It doesn't matter what machine it is, whatever the outside influences are. At the end of the day, when you get a tender, you're pricing how risky it is to complete the job and how much risk is involved that could blow the timeline out, you know?
We actually had an interesting thing that happened to us a while ago, that we had an ops guy come in, and he was starting to be involved in the process of tendering and stuff like that. And we went through his worksheet and we went through how he was tendering. And then because he was in ops and because he was going to run some of these jobs, I gave him a fair bit of free rein with a little bit of guidance and stuff like that. But you can't micromanage everyone. You have to let him run. So he came on board, bought this worksheet and stuff like that. And then it actually ended up that it was inadequate. How his formula for working out these jobs and how he was going to do it and everything else ended up that he didn't price the fuck around.
The slack.
Yeah, he didn't price that there was a hard job and that – so it meant that, but on the flip side of that, he didn't take away for an easy job. So the easy open paddock jobs that you can really bang out and you can put 40 trucks underneath and get it done in a week compared to the one in some inner city shithole laneway that you can't even get a big digger down to. And then, but they're both priced the same. Now, you end up losing the one in the paddock because someone else has taken into account that the time and the risk. Risk is low. Time is going to be shorter. Compared to the other one, you win every shit job. And so we went, we actually, like, it got busy at work, yeah? We ended up getting busier. And why? Because we were winning every shit job that no one else wanted. Like, people are like, fuck yeah, get Starbucks to come dig this one, you know? Oh, he's going to have to helicopter the dirt out from behind a thing. Oh, it's working underneath it. You know, it's going to, there's an avalanche happening, or there's a school zone, or you know, you can't get into the site until nine and you can't get out of the site after two. We won every one. And we lost a shitload. And I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, where are you going, Gray?
We're fucking busy.
Like, and I'm moving dirt, like cranking dirt. One of them was in the side of a cliff. Like, one, like, it was like looking, you know, and we got to pull 10,000 cube from down there. What the fuck is going on?
And our rates for, like, a 3-metre drop at
the surface. Yeah, in the paddock, you know, in a paddock next to the tip site.
Yeah.
And those are the things. Where do you go online, where do you go in business to learn the about pricing up X, Y, or Z, A, B, or C? When you look at it and on the surface, you have looked at it and you a car park rate is a car park rate, you know, like the subgrades are all fairly standard. Asphalt has to be 75 mil thick, go your hardest too. This one's a prick, boys. And that risk and time ratio is something that needs to be looked at. And unfortunately, I think that you can learn a little bit when you're working for others.
Yep.
And then when you work for yourself, you have to learn a lot. And how you learn is losing money.
Fuck, man. It's the only way. It is really the only way. Because I didn't come from a QS back. I'm a fucking digger operator. Me and you have done the same apprenticeship.
Yeah. Right?
Sitting in fucking machines, loading trucks, throwing dirt around, making someone else money.
Yep. I made a little bit of money for myself, but not that much.
Of course you didn't say that. But, yeah, like when we both went into business, I didn't even fucking know what a spreadsheet was, right? I didn't know about
when. You want to know the funniest part? I still don't know what a spreadsheet is.
They're a fucking – don't even get me started. But it's an interesting – it's an interesting concept because as most great earth movers and contractors start the way we started, and there's...
I think that it ends up being the fact that I know some great ones that came from the different side of it also as well that ended up being, you know, going through engineering or building or, you know, master of business or whatever. And I actually think that those times are changing because those spreadsheets and stuff like that are starting to get so difficult to get your head around that now, you know, the fact that you can move dirt 20%, 30%, 50% more efficiently, you know, is starting to matter less than how well your knowledge of contracts is. If you're smart enough to read one and find the fact that the builder wants to screw you, you know, or to read the tender notes and find out that, you know, this one's all risk on rock, you know, included. Because that's the other part. We have contracts that just say, like, like the rock risk is just your risk. Price it for whatever you want.
So much of that. I mean, I don't know what your contracts are like over here, but... you know, coming from a digger operator, you know, I'd spend a bit of time in operations management, but never really in front of contracts. And it wasn't until I became self-employed that I started getting contracts across my desk you'd read them and you'd go... I've always said to my QS, who I've bought up from sort of nothing, if you read a contract too much, it'll scare you out of the job.
You should see some of them that we get, you know, like... So the first... 5 years, I reckon, of contracts.
Yep.
I signed every single one.
Yeah.
I'd check the price. I'd read some of the clauses. I'd go, I don't get any of that. Yeah. Then I'd go flick it back. Now, I relied under the premise of I wanted to work for good people.
Yep.
I wanted to do a good job.
Yep.
If it was my fuck up, I'd pay for it.
Yep.
But then I expected to be paid. And I think that that's fairly simple. And I think that That's the sort of, you know, your dad, an old school fisherman, you know, like he worked on handshake deals and stuff like that. I'm assuming he didn't have big supply contracts with people. He just went out and bought, you know, he sold his fish to a guy named Bob, and Bob bought down a pocket full of money at the end of the day.
Pretty much.
You know?
And it still was like that. And I mean, just on a side note, like, you know, Dad's starting to retire now, but the more I tell him about this type of business and everything, he freaks the fuck out.
Yeah, no,
like,
there's no way. There's no way. Only now do we have a little bit, maybe not now, maybe in the last sort of 5 years we've managed to make this bit bigger of a process around our contracts and, you know, scribbling out things and writing our own stuff in. But then it gets to the point where, you know, we've been arguing for months over a contract and now the job's got to start, yeah?
Yeah.
Now it gets to the point, you want to do the job or you don't want to do the job?
Mm.
You know, which one is it?
That's it. And it's always like figuring out a contract and contract negotiation is a great way to figure out who your client actually is.
Yeah.
And what where their morals actually lie and what their risk tolerance is, right? Because that's where the risk is. We talk about risk and time. Well, time happens on my end and my resources and my moving my dirt, but the risk is in the contract.
Yeah, and but you want to work for good people, right? And I want to work for good people. So it's actually back-to-back risk, hopefully. And so we end up, one of the clauses, and for any contractors listening, if you ever get a clause that says, you know, like the head contract like or whatever it is, ask the person you're working for the head contract. Mm. Really simple. You're signing up to that head contract, usually around LDs, you know, and stuff like that. Just ask them for it. You're wanting to work with them, you know, and you're wanting to have the same risk. You'll actually be really surprised that sometimes these head contracts don't actually read what the person in the middle is trying to say to it. I had one that the head contract read 5,000 per day LDs and they were trying to hit us up for 15 if the job ran over.
Mm.
You know, now, what they're trying to do there is cover their overhead and cover their, you know, the costs of the job of what's going to happen in that.
Mm, mm.
But then they've got 15 people on site that they're all hitting with LDs and so they're actually getting, you know, a fair bit more money.
That's where they're making their profit is...
If they can get it for everyone, which they're most likely not going to be able to. Yeah. They're most likely going to get it to one. But
there's a red flag now that you say that about head contracts and we'll leave it on this, is I seen one recently got sent a tender package and it said, you know, as per head contract. Head contract is viewable via physical copy located in our office. So I had to drive, they wouldn't send it. So I had to drive an hour across town. If I wanted to see the head contract and read it, I had to drive an hour across town.
So is that like, what, it was 5Ks across town, took you an hour? Is that how it worked
pretty
in Auckland?
Pretty much in Auckland.
Yeah, good.
Well, fuck, it was just around the corner, 5Ks. But it's stuff like that that's red flag. And as contractors, right, nobody understands the risk in the contract better than we do, right? The people we deal with is...
Well, for our section, yeah.
For our section of it anyway,
yeah,
right?
For our section of it.
All these tags and terms and all these little nuances of these contracts, to the most of the other people reading it, they're not subject matter experts on earthworks or the risks in earthworks, and quite often we're dealing with a site level manager, and
they have to, they do, however, like these guys, and where the builder came from is like builders used to take care of the whole building. Now they're project managers, but they do have to understand if the plasterer is doing a good job, the painter's doing a good job, the landscaper's rocked up with the right plants and ordered the mulch, you know, if the bulk earthworks guy is running well or shit or whatever. So there is their own, they're a jack of all trades, probably a master of none. However, at the end of the day, they do know enough. I know some, and you'd know too, some absolute killers. I know guys who actually know more about the theory of earth moving than I do, and it's actually scary.
Yeah,
I can think of one at the minute.
Yeah.
I won't call him out, but he works for one of my best builders, and he just like knows his stuff up, down, back to front, and he's a contracts guy, and he's on top of it. It's actually quite impressive when you put it there, because I know he knows how to plaster the same, and he'll get it down and dirty and argue with a guy about the cornice and how it's meant to be put on.
yeah.
But let's go NLC. How did you start it?
So I'll twist it back to the role before. So I left Ross Reed Contractors. My sister is a very similar lady to your...
Aurelia? Yep.
Started with Self-Made Man right at the beginning, and 20 years later was... Yeah, a shareholder in one of the biggest private civil companies in Auckland.
Yep.
So my time at Ross Reed and a couple of hundred employees, I thought, nah, small fish, big pond, I'm out of here. Went and worked for my sister's company, Profloors Limited. We were one of the biggest private civil companies in Auckland. We were the main contractor for one of the largest rest home companies. And the scale of what we were... doing there was incredible. No one had ever built like that in Auckland. We were building four or five massive villages at a time. They were buying the shittier sites in Auckland. There's not a lot of infill land in Auckland left, so they were buying the biggest land they could with old tips on it and blah, 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 blah. We'd get sent in their open checkbook, 20, 30 truck and trailers, 30, 40, 50 ton machines, and just bomb trucks out for years on end. So learnt a lot about sort of doing in foundations. A lot of methods were new to New Zealand as well, like the use of shell beams and stuff, which most people probably don't even know what they are. Saves you having to dig footings in the ground. They're basically precast footings.
Yep.
Done a lot of foundation work, done a lot of big buildings, like commercial buildings, slabs. Learnt a lot about floor preps, like 5, 8, 10,000 square meter floor preps. That's amazing art, even with today's equipment. And sort of by the time I was sort of 20, I felt like I was pretty much at the top of what you could get to as a digger operator. So in about 4 or 5 years, I'd been exposed to enough of the right work, asked a lot of questions, and that's where I found I sort of advanced my career very quickly, was asking the right questions. When you find people who know their shit, fucking ask them how they learned
it. And most of them are good guys and will help.
Oh, yeah. Anyone's willing to help a keen young guy. So got into that. I ended up sort of becoming what you call a final trim operator and used to go around and do a lot of house cuts up in the hills. And by 20, I was pretty much working independently, working the plans, working to the millimetre. Managed to catch the boss one day, went into his office, sat down like this, said, I want more. And he
put some microphones in your face too.
Looked me in the eyes and he said, you're still in your pull-ups.
No, good.
So that was pretty much it. From that, I sort of thought, well, fuck you, I'm out of here. And, left, took a operating position with a company, the Digger Collective, which was a young up-and-coming company in Auckland. Seemed like they had something to prove, so went and jumped on with them. Started off as an operator and a dozer and very quickly sort of become the right-hand man on the ground, running jobs, running crews. We won a relatively big landfill contract, and so there was three of us in our early 20s had just won this relatively large construction contract, and so we managed that. It was a production contract as well, so it was the first sort of job I'd been on where, numbers are everything, and... Yeah, done that for about a year, learnt the ins and outs of it, and then just decided that it was time. And I was getting a lot of noise from other people about what I was doing, and everyone sort of kept saying to me, it's time, go do it. Just what do you got to lose? So I did. So on the 18th of March 2019, I, in my little bedroom desk, in the desk in the corner of my bedroom in my flat, I registered Next Level Civil Limited. I called it Next Level, not... obviously because I wanted to be Next Level, but there was a thing with naming businesses after your last name.
I don't know anything about that, eh? Nah.
It wasn't like the saleability thing. It was, they say saleability. I always wanted to build a business that wasn't me.
I tell you what, though,
fucking last name is a fantastic last name, though. If my name was Starbuck, I'd call it Starbuck.
Nah, but I started out when I was, similar. Like, I wasn't in my, flat in a bedroom, in a corner on desk. But like, you know, Starbuck makes sense. Other people have their last name. Gosh, I wish I called it something cool.
Starbuck and Sons,
you know,
mate.
Enviro something. Like I can feel it in my bones. Or none of my competitors are their last names in the trucking space. They all have, you know, they've named themselves after whole regions of and here I am, Starbuck. But it's too late now. We can't go back. We've got too much merchandise.
Oh, man. It's a fantastic last name. It looks fucking great out on the front there too.
Yeah, I should have been a porn star, but, you know, or at least an actor.
So, so the premise of the name was just really, I never wanted to build a business that was just me. Mm. I actually wanted to build a business right from the get-go that, and I seen this from my Pro Floors days, you know, my boss Wayne, self-made man, done it the hardest way you could possibly do it. But at 60 staff, you know, one of the biggest companies in Auckland, the business just wouldn't function without them.
And it's hard.
And so...
It's super hard.
It would function, but where's the gaff? You know, where is he? No one's seen him for weeks. And unfortunately, he was the business. And I learned that very early, that to get past that point, I don't even know how the fuck he was doing it. But to get past that point, the business needs to be far bigger than you. And I can see that in your office here, you know. Your ability to sit here and talk shit with me for an hour is solely on the premise of the team you've built and the team that's running Starbuck.
Yeah. Well, they actually run it better than I do, which is what you end up wanting. So the thing is that your old boss ran it the best, but it would have taken years and years of like diligent work from him to make people be able to run it better than him.
Yep.
If he hasn't put that in, then he's always going to run it the best. He's going to have the most information. We just spoke about this morning about, you know, our quotes and how we do things. And, you know, Aurelia, who you mentioned, was having a bit of a chat saying that she used to make me sit down for 10 minutes a day to try and get the information out of my brain and onto a piece of paper or a spreadsheet or whatever, because I just used to run all of the jobs, quote all of the jobs.
Yep.
Pay all of the invoices. You know, think about how many times someone slid an invoice in front of you and you have no system but your own brain and you look at it and go, approved, pay that.
Yep.
If that is you, then the business can scale and you can scale it big, but it will only scale on how hard you work.
Yes.
Yep. Because those invoices, instead of being one, are going to turn into 50, and then it's going to be pay slips, and then it's going to be quotes, and then it's going to be everything else.
Yep.
If you can't make people accountable and responsible and everything else for that, then you're going to end up scaling to a size where you are run off of your feet.
Yep.
But you've got a good company, but you've got a company of assistants.
I've been there.
Yeah. I'm still there sometimes.
We've all been there. I mean, you know, I'm only small in the grand scheme, but I got to about 13, 15 staff at the peak. I fucking couldn't do it on my own. It doesn't matter whether you were up at fucking dusk. I don't know, some guys probably laugh at that and go, 15, you know.
But see, it's all relative too, yeah?
Yeah,
I
yeah,
had
yeah.
a really, a really – well, no, relative to the person too, you know, so and your life. So, like, when I was – you know, when I got to 15 guys, I was less than 25. I can't remember exactly where it was, but let's call it 25 that I'm running. I'm living at home. I don't have kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, so if you're at 15 guys and you got kids and a wife who's telling you to get up and help make a bottle in the middle of the night because she's exhausted, and then you've got a house mortgage, you know, that you have to pay for, and then it starts to go like this. So your energy of your life is maybe taking some from it, which is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Or maybe you have a hobby that you really enjoy, and so the 15 guys calling you up when you're on the golf course might not be where you want to be. But if 24 and I'm running 15 guys, I ran it standing on my head.
It was
a piece of piss.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any hobbies. I don't have any kids. I don't have a mortgage. I just have to pay for diggers, and I'm making 10 grand a week. I'm killing it.
Do you look back now where you were at and go, how the fuck did I do it? How did
We got to about $20 million in revenue. I had two office skills. I didn't have an office skill until I had about 8 to 10 million.
That's mad.
So, like, we're pumping out $500,000 to $1 million a month, quotes, payments, wages, everything, and I'm just doing it on the kitchen table. Which ended up, my dining room table ended up being, one end was quotes where I print off everything and the other end was payments because I do all the payments and everything.
I didn't realise I was watching a zombie all those years ago. Fuck you.
No, it was all right, hey. I must have some sort of autism or attention deficit disorder.
You have to.
I think you have to be a little bit twisted to keep it getting it done. But, like, there were some real hard times in my life too that, you know, the bigger you've made it, then when it does start to weigh heavy on you, which is why I put up a lot of stuff about, you know, like mental health and everything, when it really does start to weigh heavy, those approvals do not stop.
No,
wages still need to be paid, and there is no spot for you to hide without destroying all of your history.
Yes.
So, like, I'm 10 years in, I'm having a bad week, and, you know, let's say that I want to sit at home, and then it's like the phone rings, and it's like, are we making that payment? And you go, I really don't want to talk about the payment. And they go, okay. You're making that payment because I've got a job to do. And you sit there and go,
I call it dues to pay.
Yeah, you got some dues.
Every day, and this is where it starts to, like you say, weigh heavy. The bigger business you build, the more liability you have, the more risk, the more moving parts, the more fucking dues you open your eyes to every morning.
Until you get the right people.
Yeah.
And then they take some of those dues themselves from you and they start to look after those things and they start to remove it from your shoulders.
Yep.
You know, the fact that I used to have to make sure I could still remember, I was complaining to one of my mates about the fact that I had to, you know, constantly chase work and put on, you know, like a happy persona even if I was having a shit day because I'm trying to make some bloke on the other end of the phone like me enough to give me his dig because I don't have any work in 3 weeks. But I'm exhausted or I'm not having a good day or I just had a fight with, you know, an argument with someone at work. And then you get someone in sales who really, really starts to, you know, take that.
The baton.
Let's say the baton. Take that from you and say, do you know what? I'll be the guy that, you know, goes out and spruiks Starbuck everywhere. Yeah. And then when he kills it, you just go.
It all makes sense. You start wondering, because I've been there and I was there recently, where you start going, how the fuck is this supposed to work?
Yeah.
How is this supposed to work? And it comes down to the sole thing of people.
Yeah.
People take that.
People are the only thing. The most important thing you've got is your employees and how they look after you and you look after them. Mm. And it doesn't matter if it's the guy sweeping the road or, you know, the girl paying the finance or whatever it might be. You know, how they look after you and what they take from your plate and what they get involved with and everything else. Like, I was dying. I ran a company of shit when I was at turning over $10 million by myself.
Yep.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
I put so much pressure on my guys on the ground. I'd push that hard for, you know, because I just had this thing that because I was paying every single bill and seeing what was in every bank account but not chasing the bills as much because if the bank account had 500 grand in it, I'm stoked. We're turning over 500 grand a month. Well, you know, I'm cool. You know, I'll get some more money in. Yep. So you leave it for a week or two. That's bad business. You need someone chasing that constantly, responding to the emails. And how do you do that? So now, because like you'd never believe it, we're probably at 40, 50 minutes somewhere and we haven't even touched on what you do yet.
Yep.
What do you do at NLC?
So it's a funny one. They either say do one thing really well or do everything half well. In New Zealand, we run a slightly different model to what you do here in Oz. You guys run quite a heavy plant hire model, from what I understand. Your excavation is one side, your cartage is the other side, and your clean fills and tips might be another division. In New Zealand, we still have a very big self-performing mantra. So our big civil contractors in Auckland, they have big fleets of trucks too. Subcontracting cartage is a big thing still over there, but it's largely self-performing model. And that's what gets you the big work. The more scope you can take on and the more scope you can deliver internally, the greater chances you have of winning the job.
So take on more risk.
Take on more risk. The client wants one man to deal with. If you can do the fucking bulk earthworks to the finish asphalt, mate, you're already won 30% of the work by default.
Yeah.
Because you're automatically going to be able to do it probably cheaper too, you know, in-house. So I always built the business with being a general contractor in mind. It takes a lot longer to – it's sort of one of those things where you go wide rather than deep. And I mean, look, we're not in any large scale yet, but we do everything from – we have machines up to 14 tons internally. Yep. I try to stay away from trucks.
Trucks evil, are a pain in the ass.
Evil things.
Yeah.
Something that I learned and told myself very early in the process, don't get fucking trucks until you need them, until your business hinges on the fact on whether you have trucks internally or not. To be honest, anymore, there's no money in cartage. There's a million guys out there fucking putting trucks on their mortgage and running them at fucking peanuts, so I don't want to join that game. So we do excavation, we do civil, we do everything from roading, you know, we try to stay away from subdivisions. It's not our thing. We like the shit work. We like the millimetre.
Now we're talking.
Fuck all fall, like 0.5%, 0.8% of fall, which for those that don't know is as flat as this fucking table here. So we pick up a lot of the sort of shit work. I wouldn't say shit work, the work that not everyone's capable of doing, to be honest. And one thing I sort of noticed when the industry dropped off about 18 months, 2 years ago, is general excavation in Auckland's pretty well toast. There's enough guys out there with diggers now and doing house cuts and what have you to not really be able to make a lot of money in it. And I mean, with the introduction of other newer brands of machinery in the country, it's only easier to get into just digging holes, you know?
Isn't that a challenge? Yeah, I'm running into the same sort of thing here. It's when the economy is booming, and I know New Zealand is the same over here, it's almost like you guys were cranking up until about 24, 18, 24, 30, whatever amount of months ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Killing it.
Yeah.
And then it's like someone turned off the tap, and then it's, you know, work's disappearing, you know, the rates are going to the floor.
Yeah, the supply in Auckland at the worst was twice the demand. So basically half the industry is parked.
Yeah.
Because there's no work, and the work that is going, there's nothing
in it. I spoke to a guy the other day, 80%. Yep. He reckons he dropped.
Yep.
Which would kill me. Yep. Like if I dropped 80% with this office, we may as well set it on fire.
Earlier this year, I had three consecutive months with 50% of turnover than what I needed to keep the wheels oiled.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurts not in those months. It hurts in the months following.
100%. Cash flow is a weird beast that ends up pinching you when you don't expect it and feeling great when you least expect it. So, yeah, I just like we've been fairly lucky. I've spoken about it a little bit, you know, but it doesn't matter how much market share you're picking up if the market's still half. Mm-hmm. And this is why I put up these posts on LinkedIn. Like, why is no one talking about the fact that it feels like the government had just turned off the tap?
Yep.
You know, but they also see because they lost all of this money. Mm. Which is where I think this comes from.
They lost
all of this money. So then they said, we're going to tax the living shit out of everyone.
Yep.
And then everyone goes, well, if you're taxing the living shit out of us, I'm not going to do as much business as I did because all I do is give it all away as tax. And so then we have no government money being spent on their infrastructure stuff and all of the developers and builders and everyone else going, well, I'm not building shit either just so that I can give it half up in tax.
Oh.
And then the last part is that because there's not as much money out there and not as many people have work, even if the builders do build it, they're not selling it because no one can get any money. But yet the banks are still making $10 billion in profit. Yeah. Like, how did...
It doesn't fucking make sense. And the thing I've seen in New Zealand, which further adds to that, is the red tape. So the amount of times we've heard from the prior Labor government and even our current National government, you know, we went from left wing to right wing, fast track consenting and shovel ready projects and all this talk about big jobs going off the ground, none of them have happened because even if the money's there, the red tape is just, the whole fucking process is so wrapped in red tape. It'd take them 10 years to even pull the fucking shovel out of the hardware store, let alone get a job off the ground, you know?
Very true. I actually put up a post this morning that I read an article yesterday. So in 2023, housing crisis, huge. We're going to, like, people are going to be living on the streets without a roof.
Yeah.
They need to be able to buy a house. And so what we're going to do is because we've kicked every prick out from the city, because of lockdowns, we're going to turn apartment buildings that are office buildings into apartment buildings. Big thing in Melbourne and New Zealand, New South Wales. You know they've done one. I believe one has been converted in total. And how many people are working on this in the government that have you gone forward with this initiative and all of this shit? How many people are doing that? And you just need to stop fucking with the market a little bit.
The public sector has never done anything in either of our countries, and especially in New Zealand.
I can't agree, because we had that big build on here, and the big build they did. Yep. And the way that they built it was, is they said – that they're, you know, shared risk contracts between the government and the consortium. So, like in saying that, these consortiums made some bank because they did, because they're
particularly in the courtrooms.
Most likely. There's one, I believe, in New South Wales that it's an all-risk contract that they put in $1 billion variation, didn't get it, and said, okay, we're not finishing the job then. Hang on a second. Wait, what? How do you take an all-risk contract that doesn't include that risk?
Yeah.
So they they said that it's and please, if you're listening in the comments and I'm wrong, please let me know I'm wrong. I'm often wrong. I believe that they signed up all risk on the ground conditions. They're drilling. They reached some fault lines of soft rock or hard rock, or the rock changed. Made a huge sinkhole, trapped the TBM underneath the ground. They said, oh, we included all rock, but not that rock. Nah, that rock's different than the rock that we included.
Yeah.
And they stopped work and said it's $1 billion to get the, you know, to get the TBM out. And then the government sits down and says, oh, yeah, no, we couldn't possibly, we're not getting stood over. But for a small to medium-sized contractor, the risk is actually a real risk. And sometimes in these large consortiums, that risk ain't a real risk no more.
Well, I think most of it's done in courtrooms now, right? And we've had a bad string of it in New Zealand, where we've given, we call it roads of national significance, is our large motorway, new motorway extensions, bypasses, you know, detouring, you know, bad parts of the road and what have you. More or less every single one of those that has been handed to a consortium or a international/local JV, all of them have ended up in the courtroom.
I think it's not all of them ended up in a courtroom here. All of them are over budget at some point. But I think that comes from the fact that there has to be a study for a year on a on some endangered frog, you know, that has a habitat there, and it costs $10 million to relocate it. However, I'm not certain about how to actually be in a country that actually we want our frogs. You know, if there's a bird, you know, I'm not one to bulldoze an endangered frog. Yeah. However, how do you streamline that process that says, right, we're going to run a frog pickup service and we're just going to drive out there, pick the fuckers up and take them out to some other creek?
Yep.
Hopefully not polluted or anything, but like, how do we streamline that so that, because I know jobs that have stopped for a year because of that frog. That's why I bring it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We have it with lizards. We're big on our lizards.
Do you have a legless lizard? We have a legless lizard, which isn't a snake, but it's a lizard without legs. You see, that's why it's in danger.
It's like a tomato being a fruit, right?
Yeah. And so, exactly. And so then, you know, but how do you make it so that the legless lizard is looked after? And I don't have the right idea. However, I know that what we're currently doing is wrong, because while one guy's looking after the frogs, one guy's looking after the grasses, another guy's making sure that the shadows don't of the new building that they're doing aren't at a certain height.
Yep.
And then if they are at a certain height, they need you to amend it or go to court with your neighbour, you know, which we don't want to build
every neighbourhood in shadows. No. But also at some point we've got to be pragmatic and build more fucking buildings and more roads when we build those buildings. And, you know, these upgrades need to happen. Mm. Not certain how. Hopefully someone in the comments knows. But, okay, so you take care of everything at NLC?
More or less. Not really. I'm pretty lucky. We're about 7 years in business. I realise that in the downturn that general contracting is just I felt in the end that I was a pig rolling in shit, and that I was a bit of a shinier pig than I probably was making myself out to be, and that it was time to knuckle down on a niche or something that separated us from our competitors. And to be honest, like me and you probably both share this mindset, what's the hardest fucking thing that we can get into that makes the most money?
Yeah, I like that. What did you choose?
Asphalt.
Okay, beautiful. How's your asphalting going?
It's going.
Good. That's what I like to hear. You bought a paver. I was proud of you when you bought a paver. I saw that you sent it to me. We were talking and I thought, you know what? Good on him. Well done.
Yeah, well, look, here's a bit of honesty. So me and you, I sent you the video of my paver and I managed to find this fucking old dinosaur down in the regions in New Zealand. Big thing about New Zealand is we are largely our roading and public works is largely owned by tier ones, particularly in the major centres. In the regions, it's a little bit different. In Auckland, where the infrastructure is owned by four or five companies. Those companies, when their pavers come up for renewal, they don't sell them in New Zealand. They send them literally to the other side of the world because they do not want anyone else in their markets. And I never really understood that until I went and tried to buy a new paver and they said, well, yeah, there's no market because when we sell them, we send them literally to the other side of the world. Hmm. We write that in the contracts when we sell them, that we will take care of disposing of them. So I managed to find this 30-year-old paver down in the regions. Drove down there, had a look at it. Didn't even know what I was fucking really looking at. I'm not from an asphalt background.
Well, you are now.
The company I work for, Profloors, did. We had an asphalt division, but I was a final trim operator. I wasn't a fucking asphalt.
I've seen a paver on a job site once, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on the other side. It was all right.
And I've prepped tens and tens of thousands of square metres of prep, but never, ever laid a fucking ton of it.
That's okay, though. You just got to match those heights.
Yeah. How hard can it be, right? Anyway,
so I bought this paver. I think it could be pretty hard, if I'm honest.
Well, found this paver, decided what was happening. We were starting to hand lay these massive fucking jobs and it was basically killing me and it was killing the boys. And very quickly I realised that a lot of my team was not hanging around to hand lay fucking asphalt with the boss. So I figured, hey, it's time to get a paver, make it a little bit easier. Found the paver. We won a job in Pukekohe doing two cul-de-sac heads and... Rather than doing the smart thing and getting someone in with a state-of-the-art machine with lasers and sensors and all that, I thought, hey, yeah, 30-year-old paver, we'll smack that out. We delivered the job, but the client wasn't happy. It wasn't our best work, but it was commercially acceptable. In the end, being the bigger man, the paver cost me 10 grand. The contract, it was an 18 grand contract. The paver cost me 10. I probably done it for about break even internally, fucked the job up, had to get one of the tier ones and cost me another 25 grand.
So, that maths ain't great maths now that I'm doing it. So you spent the 18 and then you've dumped another 25. That's a bad day.
That's risk. That is what we're talking about.
Yeah. That sounds like you're a fucking shit asphalter then.
Yeah.
Or at least you bought a shit paver.
The funny thing was, is me and you had this conversation before I even done the job. I said, hey, I've got this new paver. I'm going to take this risk on the job. I think what you said to me, good, do it.
Yeah, do good, it. Do it.
And I even said to you, I'm pretty sure we're going to fuck it up.
And I said, yeah, good, do it. Because at the end of the day...
You were responsible for...
Chances are, and how much money have you made since asphalting? I'll tell you what, you haven't fucked up one since.
Because what
was wrong with the job? What did you do wrong? Apart from the fact you bought a brand new machine that you'd never used onto a job that was challenging.
Well, I didn't really know what the fuck I was entirely doing.
25 grand will teach you it, though.
It did straight away. I'll tell you what, 25 grand was a cheap lesson to learn the lesson I learned. The next day, I was in a dealer asking how much a brand new one is.
Yep. Have you bought one?
We're getting there.
Ooh.
We're getting there.
He's non-committal.
Not that it's a hard mark. Look, the books don't really reflect the ability to go whip $500,000 plus at the moment.
That's always a bit of a challenge. However, are you paving better now? How's your job? You know, I've seen some decent car parks you've done. They don't look like they were screwed.
Yeah, absolutely. I sort of know what we're good and what we're not good at now, and I know what
job would you have done different on that job?
Contracted it out.
If you couldn't contract it out, what was the thing that screwed up the job that made the client unhappy?
My ego.
Ooh, that's deep.
My ego.
That's deep.
It was my ego. And that was the biggest lesson I've had about ego is it doesn't matter how much you fucking think you're going to do the job or how much you think you're going to deliver the job. At the end of the day, you got to stand back out of your fucking puffed up self and go, what is the actual reality of us delivering this job?
So if you had an 18 grand job that you were hoping to make 3 grand on, let's say, or four.
Best, yeah.
Yeah. Call it three. So you had 15 grand's worth of cost.
Yep.
Then you have to get someone else in to fix it, and it costs you 25.
Yeah, because then everything we put down then had to be milled off.
Oh, you had to pay to mill it off
too.
Yeah, well done.
That's where the other 7 grand come from. You see, the whole fucking lot had to be milled back off.
Well done. I appreciate the level of screw up that you did here, but you did make it right. And so that's the other big thing for NLC, yeah?
Yep.
Like you took that, like anyone listening, yeah, can you imagine hearing that even when the chips are down, even when you've possibly undercooked the quote, you'll still stand by? I don't have a job that I've walked off of yet.
That's what I was going to say. In 7 years, the most proudest thing I can say about my business, we have never not delivered, ever. Yep. We've always delivered. Sometimes not perfect, sometimes not on time, sometimes not on budget. But we've never fucking walked away from a job.
Man, and I can remember I've been burning on jobs. I've had jobs that the takeoffs were wrong. I know that they're wrong. I can't prove that they're wrong.
Can I just add a quick point? There is no more psychological warfare as a contractor than being in the middle of a job that you know has already lost money. You know you're already every day, second, every time the bucket hits the ground, you're fucking losing money. And the more resource you throw at it, the quicker you're losing money, but the quicker you're getting the job done.
I'll tell you a quick story because we've got to finish up because we got the 5 minutes signed 5 minutes ago, I reckon.
Yeah.
My old ops guy, we won a job. I told him to win it at all cost. It was variation fucking heaven.
Yeah.
Heaven.
Yeah.
Right? The scope of works was loose. The pavement makeup. But we had to take – the pavement makeup changed a lot, but we had to take on a fair bit of scope that we wouldn't normally take on. The variation heavy. Well, he won it, probably undercooked the quote. We won it, and he left. I obviously was trying to look at it holistically over the whole company that we got one job of 15 or 20 jobs. That job can sit over there, variation heavy, whatever. The builder we were working for was a bit ruthless, but we still work for them today, and I like them, I appreciate them, and they're allowed to make money too. $400,000 or $500,000 job turned into about a $2.5 million job. I spent $3 million of the $2.5 million doing that fucking job, and it was over a year long, and they're like, you need to send trucks tomorrow with Crush Rock, and you go, how the fuck are we still using more crush rock? Did anyone do a pickup on the subgrade? And they're like, no, we haven't been picking up the subgrade. And I'm like, we have to dig out extra, don't we? That then is being backfilled with crush rock. And they're like, yeah, we haven't been doing that. And that is all on these two shoulders here.
Yeah.
That is all my screw up. You know, like the things we put in place and everything else, I didn't induct the right person in on the job. I didn't have the right oversight, right management, right processes, all on me. And I burned like this on fire, like $500,000 bucks on that one. So
where were you going to book a plane ticket to?
I reckon I'd be great in the Bahamas. I'd work on my tan and I'd get it done. But is there any last points, and you don't have long, is there any last points? Because we actually watch the views drop off after 1 hour.
100%. Yeah. I know
is
that.
There any last parts that you want to say?
Stay curious. Fucking stay curious, man. Ask questions. Be hungry. Use the time that you have, especially like I'm in my late 20s. I'm not a fucking old fart yet. But I know enough now to know that time is the most precious resource we have. And if you want to do fucking great things in your life, from business to whatever, be curious. We're in a place and time where information, where knowledge is no longer power anymore. Because knowledge is at our fingertips. Everything with AI is at our fingertips. So stay curious, build skills, make yourself irreplaceable, and just fucking start. Who gives a fuck? Life is too short.
It's only 25 grand in a cul-de-sac.
Fuck, that lesson will probably be my greatest success. I will look back on that in 10 to 20 years.
He blamed me for it, and now he's bringing it back around that his greatest success.
Yeah.
Ryan, shake my hand.
Give me.
Thank you. We worked at it. Oh, I've got a stand-up one today. This is on. Okay, thank you very much. And as always, please like, comment, subscribe, send to your mates. Share it on your stories when you're listening, please, and thank you, because it does mean we get better guests sitting here and we're starting to get some stuff. 25,000 views in a month, Louis. We're getting there. Done. Thank you very much. Ryan NLC from New Zealand.